that, right? So we do a lot of trial and error. We come up with creative ways. I think it does give us a lot of creative freedom, I would say, not having data. When you have a solid data, yes, you follow it and you know, okay, this is working well, this is working well, but then you don't get creative, right? So what if you come up with something else and then it just goes and, you know, really gets successful, but you won't really come up with that because you're just following that data. But in my case, I feel like us as a team, we kind of really get creative sometimes and, you know, come up with something completely different that we haven't done. And it works really well. We get some good feedback. Sometimes, yes, it doesn't work out too. But most of the times it's been great than when we have tried something, creating something new, and, you know, the team has liked it and continue to do that based on their signals.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Product Marketing Life. I'm your host, Sid Kaitan. I'm a senior product marketing manager at Lumaps. And today I'm joined by Maitri Gandhi, product marketing specialist at Koi Shizaki America. Welcome to the show, Maitri.
Thank you so much for having me, Sid.
Yeah, Maitri, welcome. And would love to just start with you telling us a little bit more about yourself. What do you like to do for fun?
Product marketing specialist at Hoshizaki. Have been here for about 2 years now. Came from content marketing, and you know, we can delve into it deeper. What I do for fun? That's a great question. I think honestly, anything just that can get me out of the house. I can be like a homebody if you really don't get me outside my house. But just, you know, like grabbing coffee or, you know, trying new restaurants. I love trying new cuisines and different food. So that's one of the things that I've been doing recently, just kind of, you know, making reservations, going to different places. Love Asian food. I love Japanese food. So that's one of my favorites. But yeah, and, you know, just watching shows, and I have some hobbies on the side, art, painting. I'm also a fashion designer. So, you know, I also have my sewing machine when I want to do a little bit of, you know, any task for my friends and family. So a little bit of a lot of things, to be honest.
Wow. So that makes you a really great friend, basically.
Yes. It's not too hard for me to decide what to give someone. I can just be like, I think they might like it.
Nice. Yeah. I don't think that would ever get old. Like, please, just, I would take anything else that gets created as you know, having a fashion designer friend. Awesome. So maybe related is, what is the non-marketing skill or habit that's made you better at your job today?
Right. Again, great question. I think most of the product marketers I know didn't really start with product marketing, right? You kind of just find your way into it. I think one non-marketing skill I would say would definitely be asking questions. I have been someone who I love asking questions. I've been like that ever since I was a kid. My dad still tells me that he would tell me to, you know, stop asking me questions every time I would come home from school, because it would just be like in the evenings that dad would come from, you know, work, and I would be like, you know, this is what happened at school, and this is what happened, and this is what we did, and just kind of tell him all the things that he didn't want to know because he also just came from work, right? So yeah, I think asking questions. I work a lot with, you know, sales and new product team. So just really understanding, it's really important for me to understand what our products are and why we're doing what we're doing, right? And I get a lot of storytelling, good information by just asking them questions. And I think it has definitely impacted my job, and I've been better at, you know, creating good stories and messaging.
I love that. Yeah, I too like to ask questions. I guess that's why get to host this podcast. But you know, if you ever want to do a guest episode, happy to have you be the host. Awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit more about your career into product marketing. You mentioned, you know, you had a content background. Can you walk us through kind of where you started and how you landed in your role today?
Yeah, for sure. So I actually did my undergrad in fashion designing from a very good design institute, National Institute of Fashion Technology, back in India. Really learned the core of design over there. It's a very popular school, but it also really, I had the best experience there, but it really grills you as a student. Okay. You come out of the college really learning a lot of things, learning about design and about the industries that you're a part of. So really great experience, learned design, moved to New York, wanted to study fashion marketing. You know, got into LIM College in New York, studied fashion marketing. But I think in the middle of it, I just realized that I didn't want to really limit myself to fashion. I really enjoyed marketing. I loved storytelling. I loved, you know, talking to people and really understanding different products. So just kind of looked for internships, you know, here and there. And that's how I kind of got into other industries. So worked at FinTech, Visa for a while, you know, got some experience in marketing agency. A lot of my role over there was just content. So, you know, a lot of blogs, a lot of product descriptions, a lot of socials, things like that. And then, you know, at my current role at Koshizaki, I was hired as a product marketing specialist. So here I do a lot of just core, you know, positioning, messaging, go-to-market and really product marketing. But I think it all just kind of evolved into because when I was doing content, I kind of always found myself, again, asking a lot of questions, right? So like, okay, we're writing this blog. You know, we're writing this, we're writing that, but, you know, who is reading it and why are they reading it? Why are they interested in something like this? What are they doing after they're reading it? You know, what's the call to action? What is happening after this reading that they're doing? So I think a lot of that just leads to product marketing, right? Then now I'm able to create solutions and create stories that kind of really helps the user, that's person that's reading it. So that just really includes me in talking to sales and, you know, customers and, you know, our new product and asking their questions and then kind of really whatever content I'm creating, whatever things that I'm creating, sales enablement mostly really happens through just that. So yeah, a little bit of content and then kind of really just found myself product marketer.
That's really interesting. What was the transition like? Like you raised your hand and said you wanted to do this, or you had someone that, you know, kind of identified you as a great talent?
I think it was a mix of both, to be honest. I really found myself, you know, asking for opportunities and more responsibilities into my roles that were more related to product marketing. And my teams that, you know, were there at that time were just really supportive. And they kind of really saw that, okay, you know, this would be something that you'd be interested in. At my current role, when I actually got initially hired, I was mainly focused on content, but then we had a new director come in and she helped with like a lot of kind of just title management systems. So like really making sure, you know, the person whose title is what they're doing, that kind of task. And that was really helpful because, you know, based on the skills that the team had, she kind of distributed responsibilities. So a little bit of both of that really helped me. So transition, I would say, wasn't really that hard because I was genuinely interested in this, right? And just a lot of learning from, you know, people around me and just my teams and LinkedIn and, you know, a lot of mentors that I follow. So that was how it was.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, like, everyone has their stumbled into product marketing moment. So like, how did you hear about the discipline to begin with and then like decide to carve out this path?
To be honest, it was like the other way for me. I was kind of really doing all the tasks. And then I kind of realized that, oh, this is what is product marketing, right? Honestly, I know a lot of people who kind of, whose journey is kind of like this. It's like, okay, you're doing all this positioning, messaging, and they probably have titles of marketing specialists and, you know, all of that. But then when they want to climb up in their career and they want to kind of get into specifics, do what they really enjoy, that's when they really find that, oh, this is, you know, product marketing, because, you know, you're dealing with numbers as well as you're dealing with, you know, stories and content. So a lot of mix of all of that. So I would say I was doing a lot of these things and then I kind of was like, oh, this is what's product marketing. And then I really looked into it. Now, you know, with Product Marketing Alliance, you have so many resources. You talk to a lot of people through, you know, the Slack channel and just kind of webinars that we have. So now I've gotten really too deep into it. But initially it was just really just, okay, you're doing these things and then this is what it's called and all of that.
Yeah. Once you're in, you get sucked in. There's no escaping. That's really cool. So yeah, I would love to hear a little bit more about what you're up to now. Even what is, you know, what's the space you're in? What is Koshizaki?
Right. So I'm the sole PMM at Koshizaki. I do product marketing at Koshizaki America. So we are, American division of a Japanese company, Koshizaki. We make food service, commercial food service, kitchen equipment, ice machines and refrigeration to be specific, right? So very non-SaaS. So that's why I love it. So I would say We have a lot of ICPs. I think that's one of the things. It can be both a blessing and a challenge, I would say. It's the sales channel is a very distribution kind of channel. So we are mostly not selling to the chef or a bartender. We are mostly selling it to dealers, and then they kind of end up selling to, you know, the operators, right? So we have a lot of people. The sales channels are long. The cycles are long. Churn rate is very low. Our products last them for years, right? So the product marketing techniques and the sales enablement and go to market is very different for each ICP. So my main role as a product marketer at Hoshizaki is just to kind of keep the core of the messaging very active, but at the same time, kind of keep into consideration the ICP that I'm trying to reach out to, right? So we deal with six main industries, I would say. Food service, so that includes restaurant, bars, and, you know, like that. And then we have hospitals, we have education, basically any place that has a commercial kitchen, right? So these are our main industries that we're dealing with. And then we have all the dealers specific to those industries. And then we have the operators, the people that actually use our machines. And then we also have consultants and designers who have us in their blueprint before a purchase order is even made. So a lot of different ICPs there, right? So that's one of the things I love is that we keep the core of our messaging, which is, you know, the longevity of our products, the reliability that our products give you, and then kind of really make it such that it's catering to that particular person that we are talking to. So that could be at a trade show that is only for education. So, you know, we are talking to people who are looking at getting equipment that are, you know, sanitary, like, you know, because they are kids and you want to make sure that, you know, if there are equipment that do not require any touch, that would be perfect. So then, you know, kids don't end up getting sick. If it's C-store, we don't want equipment that are too loud because, you know, you have customers walking all the time. You don't want merchandises and refrigerators that are too loud. So a lot of these different things we kind of really understand from just talking to our customers and then, you know, build our messaging around it. So that's pretty much I do. A lot of messaging and positioning is involved in my day-to-day role.
Yeah. And to your point also, it seems like knowing your ICP and being able to develop, you know, what comes next.
Oh yeah, 100%. It's so important, which is why we do a lot of, so like I said, our whole sales model is a very relationship-driven model, right? It's not just like a product marketer, like we don't just get a lead on our website or social media and then we can connect it back, and you know, we cannot do that. It's just not possible in our industry. So our sales team is really great with building relationships, and that's why we have a lot of these trade shows. I just attended a really probably the biggest trade show in our industry called National Restaurant Association show in Chicago 2 weeks ago, which is where I kind of really get to talk to our sales team, get to talk to our customers, you know, get to talk to our dealers that are visiting our booth and really trying to understand what are the problems that they're dealing with, you know, what is happening in the industry. The things that you would not really get an answer through a survey that we often do, right? We actually talk to these people. Let's say they just walked out of a competitor booth. So they already, you know, have an image. They're already comparing us with something or someone, right? So, you know, all of those things you really kind of get to know when you actually meet them in person and talk to them. So it's one of my favorite things. And I think that's the way you actually really learn how to get to know your ICP better.
Absolutely. Do you like grab people out of their booth or like try to find people on the show floor, or is it like they come to your booth and you start asking the questions?
Oh, our booth is like a huge, we have a really large booth. Yeah. I love our booth. I'm going to be biased, but no, we always have people coming in. Yes, we have a lot of people coming in, a lot of meetings, and you know, our sales team already have built very strong relationships. Anyone who is actually a part of that industry kind of comes to the show. It's a very large show, right? Just for the relationship purpose and just to kind of see what the brands and the companies are doing, the latest launches. We always end up launching something new at a lot of these large shows. So yeah, we just have people come in, and you know, our sales team obviously takes care of that. You know, they have a good storyline. We provide them with a good sales enablement material for the booth, and they take it from there. You know, they know what kind of pain points and all of that to target. They ask a lot of questions. and then kind of, you know, build them a story where, you know, how we can come in and how we can pitch in and what kind of products would be useful for them. You know, what kind of machines, ice machines. So like we have some ice machines that produce a lot of amount in less than 24 hours versus some who have different shapes and sizes. We have ice machines that have spheres ice, right? We have 2x2, the large cube. We have 1x1. We have a crescent ice. We have a cubelet ice. So a lot of different shapes and sizes. So we really try to understand the concerns of the of our customers. You know, what kind of restaurants that they have, what kind of, you know, if they have a bar, they want specialty ice, which is like different types of shapes and sizes to, you know, increase their revenue per cocktail, right? So it really comes down to understanding their pain points, what are they looking for, and then we just kind of suggest them what would be the best for them.
Yeah. So I know we were talking about this the other day, but like this kind of brings me to the point of a lot of times, you know, PMMs are kind of instructed, you need to learn the product, you know, the ins and outs of the product, you know, right, it better than anyone else. And you push back on that kind of premise. What makes you, you know, think this way? And you answer some of this as well, but like, even when we come to a new PMM, you know, someone else just broke in, let's say from the content work stream. Mm-hmm. Where should they focus instead?
Yeah, no, I think I always push back. It's because I feel like whenever someone joins a new company, or, you know, when they get their hands on a new product, right? I think it's the first instinct is like, learn the product, learn the ins and out of product, which I understand is really, really important. You obviously need to understand everything about your product because that's how you're going to sell it. But then I feel like I always found myself as a product educator versus a product marketer, right? Someone who knows everything about a product, but at the same time, if I don't understand the market that I'm selling to, I'm not going to be able to convert the technical details of my product and, you know, convert them into the customer ready narratives that I want to build that story, right? As a product marketer, I love building stories. I want to make it easy for you to understand that product. That's my whole point, right? So I feel like, I feel like, if not more, there should be an equal focus because it's called product marketing, right? Yes, product, but also marketing. So the market that you're dealing with. Equally important because that's how you can, like I said, like because we have a lot of ICPs that we deal with, one of my main jobs right now is constantly to understand their pain points, right? Different industries, different concerns. So for me, if I don't really understand the ICP, I'm not going to be able to really explain them my product, right? I'm not going to be able to build materials for my sales team to be able to make that conversation easier. So I feel like, yes, I've seen a lot of PMMs kind of really focusing on just like learning the product. And I'm sure that's great. And, you know, it's really important. But if you learn your ICP better, I feel like the messaging could be better. One of the things that can really happen is you end up creating a messaging that works for all the ICPs and then it's not resonating with anyone, right? So that's why I feel like, yes, focus on learning your ICP a little bit more than your product.
Yeah, I like that. And when it comes to really understanding this ICP, you mentioned the trade show and other places you can kind of gather some of this research. But right, the other kind of issue, right, with some of your space is that there's no like clean attribution, right? So how do you work around that, right? And the typical SaaS, it was funny actually when you were talking about booth, like I imagined a really small booth because I've always worked in startups at early stage SaaS, whereas you guys probably own a lot of that show floor and people very much come to you. So it's a lot different. But yeah, even then, right, like for us, it's like lead, you know, new opportunity and then tracked at every level. For you guys, it might not be that way and it's much longer sales cycle. So how do you learn and know what's actually working?
Yeah, no, great point. And yes, our booth is very big. You should see our social media, the NRA booth and just in general, yes, it's very different than SaaS, I would say. I feel like you triangulate, right? A lot of these things, yes, we want data and our team is constantly striving for data. Any kind of data is good. We love a good data set, right? We are marketers at the end of the day. But I feel like we end up focusing on qualitative signals then, right? All the sales enablement material, it's one of the biggest tasks for our team. We make a lot of sales enablement for our, for our sales team because they go to a lot of trade shows throughout the year. Trade shows for different industries, right? So different teams go for different industries. So all that sales enablement has to be personalized for that particular show. So we make a lot of sales enablement, right? So we focus on signals, right? We focus on what is our sales team saying after, you know, a trade show? What kind of things helped them? What did not? What kind of posts are being shared? We have a DAM, you know, where we upload a lot of these enablement materials, social media things that they can share, right? So what are articles that are being downloaded, right? So any kind of data we can get, we try to get. But yes, like you said, the sales cycles are really long. Even if we get a lead on social media or a website, we're not going to be able to track it because ultimately we have to send the lead to a salesperson who ends up sharing it to the dealer or the distributor who then ends up making a sale. Maybe they connect to a rep group and then they end up making a sale. And obviously, it's not that common that one person out of the whole cycle giving back that information that, you know, as final sale was made. So yes, we cannot track it. We try to trade shows get us leads, right? So we have a system where we track all the leads and then the sales team kind of takes it from there based on, you know, the kind of accounts that they work with. But yes, I feel like qualitative signals wherever we can. We ask a lot of questions too. We work really close to our sales team. So we just literally just ask them that, hey, what has been working? What do you think we should do more of? Sometimes they'll suggest, hey, this particular trade show didn't really work out. You know, maybe we could skip investing in it. So, you know, we listen to all those signals. We listen to all the messages that we get from different teams, and we try to, you know, make a judgment. So yes, a good judgment is really important, but a little bit of data, but a lot of judgment is basically how we kind of work through this.
Yeah, that makes sense. There's a lot of dynamics that might not be tracked in a CRM, but like right. You're able to start figuring those out by doing a lot of detective work.
It's basically making the most out of what you can, right? My director always tells me, it's one of the questions that actually recently kind of, I went to her and I was like, you know, I see these people on LinkedIn and they have these solid metrics and, you know, they have this and that and this and that. And she was so great. And she explained me the whole thing. And she was like, okay, you know, this is what we, and I, as a team, because we work together as a team, we also kind of understand and try to get whatever signals we can. But it's mostly has been just listening and just working together well as a team, and ultimately making things that can be really useful. We do a lot of trial and error. Each trade show that we do, we have ended up, you know, we'll create something different, something new, and just kind of see, okay, do you think this is going to be helpful to the sales team? Let's see how they react. Let's see how they're going to be able to use it. You know, something that's friendly on the mobile screen or something like that, right? So we do a lot of trial and error. We come up with creative ways. I think it does give us a lot of creative freedom, I would say, not having data. Because, you know, I feel like when you have a solid data, yes, you follow it and you know, okay, this is working well, this is working well. But I feel like then you don't get creative, right? So what if you come up with something else and then it just goes and, you know, really gets successful, but you won't really come up with that because you're just following that data. But in my case, I feel like us as a team, we kind of really get creative sometimes and, you know, come up with something completely different that we haven't done. And it works really well. We get some good feedback. Sometimes, yes, it doesn't work out too. But I think most of the times it's been great than when we have tried something, creating something new and, you know, the team has liked it. And we continue to do that based on their signals.
Yeah, I like that. You're not being creative if you're not taking risks. And right. If you're taking risks, you're probably going to have a few misses as well.
Yeah.
How do you, we have all these different ICPs, and of course you have to like think of messaging different based on who they are and how they think. How do you manage that in terms of there's a consistent voice, maybe not. And then at each ICP, you know, they have a very translated reasons to believe or like key value themes that you're able to communicate. How do you do that? How do you balance, you know, the top level versus what's happening at each ICP?
Right. Great question. I would say one of the things that we always do is, you know, you keep the core messaging principles separate from surface execution, right? So basically, our core messaging that we really want to, you know, share with everyone, or, you know, we want everyone to believe in the industry, is like our products are really reliable, right? Long-lasting, quality products, right? But then, you know, the same messaging is going to be different for a dealer, and it's going to be different for the end operator that's actually going to be ending up using the product. So pretty much just that, you know, really understanding. And this happens through trade shows. This happens when I talk to these people. A dealer cares about, you know, their margin. They care about not getting a call from a restaurant owner that they sold to at 2 a.m. saying that, hey, this stopped working, right? So they care about condenser. They care about these things, right? So we kind of give them a little bit of technical details like, hey, this is really great. This is really great. The quantity that we produce, the ice machine produce, can be really great based on the kind of customers that you have. You know, if they're large scale chains, they want more ice and less ice. And that's one of our specialty. We have ice machines that, you know, we have ice machines that produce a lot of ice in 24 hours versus, you know, our competitors. So a lot of these things, we focus on that. But at the same time, you know, a bartender, let's say he or she, they want a ice machine that is going to give them good quantity on a Saturday night when they have a lot of customers coming in, right? So our messaging for them is going to be based on like that, like, hey, you know, Saturday night, you know, these are the kind of ice machines we have, you know. So at the end of the day, it's all just really understanding each of the ICP that we're dealing with, that we're talking to. So, you know, we have a lot of different trade shows for different industries, right? So our sales team really understands, and we try to make whatever materials that we are making for them very customized to that particular industry that they're going to the trade show of. So, yeah, keeping that core messaging intact, but really separating it from the surface execution has been something that we really work as a team and make sure that we try to do that. Because I've seen a lot of PMMs kind of really try to make the messaging consistent, and they focus so much on it that, you know, the messaging really ends up being so vague that none of the ICPs are able to resonate with it, right? So yes, it's important to have consistency in your messaging, truly, yes. But at the end of the day, you know, you want to make sure that you're being able to reach to the right person that who wants to buy it, right? The go-to-market. Otherwise, the go-to-market is not going to be great, and, you know, it's going to be all over the place. So I would say not being so obsessed with the consistency of messaging has been really helpful.
I'm smiling because I just got through a project where I was screaming that from the top. Like, I think exactly there needs to be some level of consistency so there is like recognition and recall.
Right.
But at the end of the day, if it's too vanilla, you're basically talking about yourself without actually adjusting to how the bartender is thinking and like what they actually care about, the context that they live in. So I think it's a really good point. Also, it seems like the stakes are high, right? You said there's very long sales cycles, low churn. So I'm guessing across the industry, right? You only get so many chances in your sales team.
You know,
a big deal is a big deal. So I found it interesting. We were talking earlier and you mentioned, you know, we create a lot of sales enablement. And I thought that was interesting because most PMMs either kind of do not enjoy doing it and they don't tell anyone about it, or they're kind of forced to do it, but they don't necessarily feel proud of that work. So it was interesting to me that you, you know, kind of raised your hand and said, I enjoy sales enablement and we do a lot of it. Where does that come from, that like passion? Because I feel like in PMM circles, often people don't enjoy that part of the work as much.
Right. No, that's a great question. And I've also seen a lot of people on, you know, LinkedIn, and it might not be their favorite task to do, I would say so. But I think a little bit of it has to do with my design background and also my transition from content to product. I think I did a lot of sales enablement during that transition because I think it's a good mix of both content and product marketing, right? I think one of the things that really helped me, and I've kind of heard that from, you know, some of my mentors, is just like treating sales enablement as not as a deliverable, right? But actually just as something that can spark a conversation. At the end of the day, it is something that's going to help your sales team spark a conversation, right? That's why we even create these materials. So, you know, they don't they don't want a six-page PDF. They don't want a PDF that has all the product information. They just want something that they can talk about in the 30 seconds. You know, they can just have a glimpse of it. And then they can, you know, just talk about it and build on it, right? They're skilled enough. They can understand. They can talk about a product very well. But they just want something to in the first 30 seconds that can help them, right? So those are the things that I really keep in mind. And I think that's why it has been pretty easier for me to create sales enablement materials, because yes, my design skills have helped me, but at the same time, I try not to make it too complicated, right? At the end of the day, it's the messaging that you actually want to make, produce for your customers is basically, you get to know that when you talk to your customers, right? The words that they're using, that's basically your messaging, right? So I try to just keep it simple and, you know, include all of that into my sales enablement materials so they can easily connect. And not make it too, you know, complicated or too much filled of information with, you know, things that are already present on my spec. So yeah.
I like that. Yeah, it's designed to guide a conversation. And I've definitely been through the cycle of like slide fatigue. I was like, okay, I don't know if I enjoy enablement anymore. But yes, yeah, so like you're saying, if you take like the conversational mentality and like the slides are there to guide a broader discussion and even test some of your messaging, right? And understand if it's working in the market and how people are reacting. So that makes a lot of sense. I think this is really interesting because of the difference, right? As a Series B, mostly SaaS PMM, I feel like there's a lot of things, you know, they're similar, but very different at the same time compared to what you work on daily. So let's say that, you know, I was to spend a week in your shoes working at with what you do and like in the space you're in, what would me or any other PMM learn from that experience that they probably wouldn't have before?
Right. Wow. What a great question. I would say, so if you were to spend a week in my shoes, I would say definitely patience and relationships. These are two things that we're really dealing with. Because like we spoke about, you know, the sales cycles are so long, you know, channels are long. There's so many people involved in our channel, in our distribution. You got to really have patience with the whole cycle, right? It really teaches you patience. Relationships, because I think that's literally what our sales model is built on. You know, our sales team has relationships with their customers for years and years. And, you know, it can take like from months to even a year to a couple of years to really have a big deal kind of, you know, being closed. There's a lot of trust that's required into, you know, using our products, because we provide that quality, that promise, that, you know, the longevity. And at the end of the day, we really focus on the problems, right? So someone who's actually has a restaurant, they probably build that restaurant with a lot of passion and, you know, serving customers. And I feel like just food in general, it's a great industry to be a part of. So when I go to these shows, I really understand that, you know, it's not just, yes, you go out, you know, you have a meal and you know, you go home, and that's not it. There's so many things that has gone behind of you just having that one plate of food, right? So that really kind of comes into, you know, that relationship building factor that we really focus on, you know, really just giving good products to our customers, right? So I would say, yes, a lot of that you would learn. Because SaaS has a lot of data, right? It's just so much data. A SaaS PMM can, you know, do A/B testing on the website for you know, 24 hours, and then, you know, catch some signals, and then they'll understand, okay, you know, I need to change this messaging. And I love that. I love a good data set. I really envy that. I wish I had that. But at the same time, I try to get these signals different way, right? Sure. It just works differently in my industry, so.
Yeah, a lot of qualitative. Interesting. Yeah. Awesome. This has been a great conversation. I have a few questions I like to ask as we conclude. One of them is my favorite. It's product marketing is blank. Can you fill in the blank?
Great question. I would say product marketing is the reason the right person hears about the right product at the right time. Right. That's basically what a product marketer's job is. You know, we come into the picture, We try to make sure the person that you're selling to, the ICP is correct, the timing is correct, you know, and also the way you're reaching them, the distribution, the go-to-market is correct. I would say pretty much just that.
Solid. Okay. Maitri, how can people learn more about your work and what you're up to?
LinkedIn would be the best place. I constantly post about, you know, my experience with product marketing, something new that I'm learning. Nowadays, I'm exploring a lot with AI. So I try to kind of just, you know, put some content about that as well. But mostly, yes, LinkedIn, I'm always open to, you know, new connections, having new conversations with people. So, you know, reach out and we can just both learn from each other.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining. It's been a great talk.
Thank you so much, Sid. This was great. Have a good one.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Thanks again and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.